Support for this program is brought to you by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
From the studios of KUOM Radio K at the University of Minnesota, this is Culture Cube, the arts show that rocks. This week on Culture Cue, Do the Whirlwind.
It's really about the development of them as puppet artists.
The idea is to take advantage of every available calorie of heat and bake something appropriate for the temperature. The
dogs seem to all get along fairly well. You might be hearing a little barking here and there, but overall, people are well-mannered and behaved, and so are their pets.
It's just so freaking weird that I really thought it would be a disaster, and it ended up being one of the most popular sketches we've ever done.
Thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Noel Clark. During the heart of winter, time can feel like it's crawling along. But with the coldest months behind us, the days are getting longer and life is spinning its way into spring. With this in mind, we bring you stories from across the board this week. We've got tails, whiskers, beards, red, puppets, and even a dragon, maybe. So come along and do the whirlwind. It's Culture Cue, and it starts right now.
She says you're giving up. Your folks told me you should be left alone on a mountaintop. Knocking the airplanes down with stones. Do the whirlwind and carry the hope that sings all night long.
Puppet shows are rarely thought of as a medium for legitimate art, but to many in the thriving Minneapolis puppetry scene, they're the best form of expression. In the Heart of the Beast, Puppet and Mask Theater is at the forefront of this scene. On Friday, they launched the third annual installment of their Puppet Labs series, a workshop to develop budding puppet artists. Reporter David DeMarc has more.
So I'm going to shake a saw, an actual hand saw, for the effect of eyeballs popping out of Tommy's skull.
That's Matt Larson, the sound producer for Cartoon, an adult puppet show in the Puppet Lab series at the Heart of the Beast Puppet and Mask Theater, running from Friday, March 1st to Sunday the 3rd.
So at some point, I think Crackjaw or Tommy, one of the characters, gets electrocuted, and we're using a bug zapper that I'm just putting a pencil into. There's no pre-recorded, no computers involved. It's all either me making sound effects, the quartet doing music or effects on their instruments, or the choir is singing, and there's live narration, and then also the performers are making a lot of sounds as they go.
This is all part of the vision of director Steve Ackerman. Ackerman originally played with the idea of having pre-recorded sound effects, but ultimately the team decided that it was best to forego the inorganic.
Even if we wanted like a literal lion roar, it's more interesting to try to make something creative rather than just have a few audio files in the show that probably would have been out of place, just in terms of the overall mix of the sound.
Keeping the sound authentic is important when it plays such a huge role in the show. Ackerman explained to me just how vital it is.
A lot of the sound that we add are meant to like punctuate certain cartoon actions. And a lot of the sounds we try to just mimic some of the earlier cartoon sounds that people would be familiar with. So they might hear it and be like, oh yeah, that came from the cartoons.
The influence from early cartoons doesn't end there. Ackerman even claims that Cartoon is based on an animated short called Tommy the Talking Turtle Sucks on the Piano Keys.
Well, it's actually fictional. I just made it up, but I just wanted it to appear as though it was real. So it's kind of just an ode to like the Tex Avery, Chuck Jones cartoons. So I try to just mimic those.
It's easy to understand why that style appeals to him.
A lot of the violence, the quick movements, they're almost like silent movies, almost, where there's just two characters and there's not too much dialogue. It's just a lot of quick action.
Puppet lab is a six-month intensive look at projects. So the puppet theater chooses four artists, and they can be teams, but four artists or teams to focus on a piece and also focus on their artistic exploration and their voice in terms of what kinds of stories they want to tell.
That's Allison Heimstead, the curator of the Puppet Lab series. She says each year Puppet Lab is radically different due to the style and subject material chosen by the artists.
It's really about the development of them as puppet artists.
She says one of the primary goals of the Puppet Lab series is to let the artists realize their creative dreams.
The artists have full autonomy to make the decisions. It's really an exploration of their project, and so we are looking at how do we help them develop their technique and their vision.
Fortunately for both her and Ackerman, puppetry is the perfect medium for that.
The possibilities are pretty much endless. You can do whatever you want to with a puppet. Whereas sometimes humans and actors are somewhat limited, just as far as like laws of physics.
I love puppetry because it combines a lot of different art forms. It combines storytelling and painting and music and dance and movement and engineering. I love it because it also can dive off of like strict narrative storytelling into like more expressionistic, symbolic areas. That too, I love that about it.
And as one of only 4 out of 13 applicants to have their shows produced, Ackerman is grateful for the opportunity. And that type of opportunity is something that is amply provided by a city like this one.
I think one thing that's exciting about puppetry in Minneapolis is that there is so much puppetry happening that I do think that audiences are a little bit more prepped to be able to see a puppet show that is for adults.
For Culture Q, this has been David DeMarc. Thank you for listening and stay tuned.
With the feudal system thrown out the door after the French Revolution, the fees that villagers previously had to pay to use a communal wood-fired oven vanished as well. Ownership of ovens shifted to the community, and once a week the stove was fired up and people would gather around to bake bread and share stories. More than 2 centuries later and over 4,000 miles away, producer Markita Foronoff found a Minnesota community that has made a home for this European tradition.
Are you here for the Tai Chi class?
Ross Safford doesn't teach Tai Chi, so it's a good thing the class I was sitting in on was about bread.
Okay, all right, so go ahead, dump this out.
Actually, the class isn't even about bread either.
Does everybody remember how to do the stretch and fold?
Sure. Safford is teaching us to stretch and fold ciabatta dough and helping people slide dough into the wood-fired oven. But the Saturday morning class isn't full of dedicated bakers or pastry chefs by trade. In fact, most of the people in this class are just regular folks, and that's the point.
It's much more about the conversations and the community that happens around the bread than it is about the bread itself.
Bryce Johnson, the pastor of White Bear Lake United Methodist Church, learned about the communicative powers of bread while abroad on sabbatical in France and Italy.
I had an opportunity to work with a French baker for about 3 weeks. He didn't speak English, I didn't speak much French, but bread had its own language.
When Johnson came back to the States, he went from student to teacher and began teaching bread baking classes. But it wasn't until he had helped build an oven first. Johnson and a team of volunteers spent over 1,000 hours and more than $6,000 building the oven that now sits outside of the church. But for a 16-loaf brick oven, that price is a bargain.
The stonemason estimates it would cost $25,000 if we were to pay him to build this. Came to show us some samples and he said, I can tell you the stuff it costs, but I got this left over from a project that if you'd like this stone, you can have it. We really like that stone.
Each month, people from all over have the chance to use those bricks and make up to 2 loaves in the community oven. David S. Cargo isn't an oven master at White Bear Lake, but as an oven builder, bread lover, and the vice president of communications for the St. Paul Bread Club, Cargo is an oven master in his own right.
The reason that people will use a wood-fired brick oven instead of a home oven is that your home oven heats essentially either with gas or electric. It's heating via hot air. In a wood-fired brick oven, you have the hot hearth, and you're getting radiant heat from the mass around it as well as the hot air. So you're getting three kinds of cooking going on instead of just one.
The oven is fired up the night before the community bread bake and remains hot for several hours throughout the day.
These ovens will often heat up to 900 degrees, which is a good pizza temperature, and you can actually start baking bread at about 600 degrees. The idea is to take advantage of every available calorie of heat and bake something appropriate for the temperature of the oven.
For Cargo, the most important ingredient in bread is what he calls the intangible one, time. His rationale is twofold. First,
because the longer you take to make your bread, the better the flavor it has.
Secondly,
community ovens get people talking because everybody has to, you know, wait around for their bread to bake at least half an hour. We have some students who are in college who are baking in order to save a buck on their, you know, college grocery bills, and we have retired people who needed to pick up a hobby in retirement to keep from going crazy. So we've got all kinds of people, and they're all brought together by their love of bread.
Safford, the baker we met earlier, agrees that this talk time is an essential part of the bread baking class.
We could do this more efficiently, but it's not the point. You know, we do stuff in buckets and we do stuff by hand because there's all that visiting and community and conversation and stuff that happens. We're so quick to vilify the other person because they don't dress like us or talk like us or look like us or have the same color skin as us or whatever it is. And so we can break some of those things down through bread, which, you know, tastes good, among other things, right? So.
While these classes are advertised as baking, the instructors hope that their students can walk away from the experience having made something more than just a loaf of bread.
I mean, at the end of the day, you know, bread is the thing that we're doing, but it's really about community. It's really about building a kingdom, if you will, or building a culture that can be there for each other and talk to each other and so forth.
For Culture Q, I'm Markita Fornoff.
And now Culture Q's Top 7 with Jared.
And Ross. You know, Jared, you're looking great today.
Thank you, Ross.
I think you're looking very, very attractive in this moment.
Oh, thank you so much. It's exactly what I said to myself in the mirror this morning when I woke up. But I'll also acknowledge that you look really, really good.
Thank you, because that's the only thing I strive for. I work very, very hard to try and look good.
I think we can attribute all of our success as good-looking guys.
As good-looking men to 7 particular cosmetic products.
Yeah, top 7 cosmetic products that every guy should own?
That every man should own. Number 7 would be the razor.
Oh, God, get rid of that scratchy beard.
Get rid of any scratch whatsoever, because women aren't going to want to be near your face if it is going to harm them physically.
That is a good point. Also, nobody wants that food trap hanging from your face.
Nobody wants to watch you having that food trap, and you shouldn't feel comfortable finding something you tried to eat 2 days ago.
Snacks are great, but not when they come out of your beard.
They should come out of the bag, not out of the beard.
Ross, your breath smells great.
I'm so glad you noticed, because I have been using our number 6 cosmetic product, the mint.
Ah, the spearmint.
The spearmint, the peppermint.
The wintergreen mint gum.
The entitlement, because all are entitled to great breath by sucking on a mint or chewing on some mint gum, because you're giving somebody that
you're entitled to good breath.
The good-smelling wisp of your breath when you get in their face.
Excellent.
What would our number 5 product be, though,
Number 5? I'd have to say That thing you had out the other day, what was that?
That was an eyebrow comb.
An eyebrow comb.
I keep my eyebrows in the way that the nature gods intended for them to be, which is bushy and beautiful.
Keep them clean. Keep them tight.
Keep all the oil and sweat and gravity and stress and heartbreak from weighing down your eyebrows. Bring them back up to where they should be with an eyebrow comb.
The four eyebrows between the two of us look great.
They look amazing.
Get an eyebrow comb.
Also important would be our number four product, the Q-tip.
Get in there. Get the stuff out. Get it clean.
It's like a mop for the side of your head.
You'll hear better.
You'll feel better.
You'll live better.
You'll be able to sense everything around you at a higher frequency than you ever thought was possible if you've spent your whole life with a creepy old wax trap in your ear.
That's right.
That's very true.
A lot of cosmetics seem to improve the senses.
Enhance you, make you feel almost superhuman, which is something that can be achieved with our number three cosmetic product, contact lenses.
Contact lenses are important, just as important as glasses, but a little bit better.
A little bit better, because, you know, Spider-Man, when he got bit by a spider, he didn't need to wear glasses anymore. But you're not going to be bit by a radioactive spider, so you may as well just get the next closest thing.
I actually wouldn't mind being
bit by a radioactive spider. I'm actually still holding out. Like, I'm either, like, following this college major path, or I'm getting bit by a spider. But, you know, it's my backup plan.
Backup plans are good to have. Like, if...
If you don't have shampoo, a good backup plan
is dry shampoo, because it's the bomb.
The number two cosmetic product is dry shampoo, which Jared has sold me on just by letting me see his beautiful hair.
Hey, thanks, Ross, for that compliment. Beautiful hair is really, really important. Hair is probably one of the most important attributes on any person.
Dry shampoo, you don't have to shower.
5 minutes.
You just have to shampoo.
It's just done. It's just boom, right there.
It's a lot like microwaving a meal. Like, you know, it's real fast and efficient, but it's for looking good.
Are we on number two right now?
I believe we are segueing into our number one cosmetic product.
The number one product that you
Would you like to do the honors, Jared?
I would love to tell people that they need the deodorant. They need deodorant. Oh, my God. If you walk into a room and everyone's just, like, offended by your presence, not because of anything you said, but just because...
Because of how you smell under your arms and around your body.
Oh, boy.
You're an inherently terrible person, and you can counteract that by buying a good old-fashioned stick of deodorant, some spray deodorant, get it on you, let it eliminate your musk and enhance your aura. So when you walk in a room, you're gonna turn heads, particularly because the nose is on the front of the head, and that's what everyone's going to be pointing towards your great-smelling self.
Places that are okay for people to smell bad. Nowhere. The moon's a good place.
The moon.
Go to the moon if you want to smell bad.
Most planets.
Get out of my classroom if you're smelling bad. You know, those are the seven things that every dude should own if they want to be good looking, successful, have a great life, earn a lot of money, get a lot of ladies, if that's your thing.
Those are all of the things that are mine. And you know what? I feel like these seven products are so good that you can tell how handsome Jared and I are through the radio waves.
So go to your local dad's closet.
Your dad's, he use these products to do important things in the past.
He met your mom.
Like woo your mom, and you have to pay him back by becoming such an outstanding man as your extremely dapper father.
This has been Culture Q's Top 7 with Jared.
And Ross. Stay tuned for more Culture Q.
Flying across the desert in a TWA, saw a woman walking across the sand. Then walking 30 miles en route to L.A. to get a brown-eyed handsome man. The destination was a brown-eyed handsome man.
The Whisker Whirl, the annual dog event of the year, invites ladies and gentlemen of Minnesota to bring their dogs, preferably dressed to impress, to a sophisticated auction and dinner, all in the name of supporting the Animal Humane Society. The goal is to create a safer and happier world for animals. Producer Matt Curtis was one of the gentlemen that attended.
A harp is displaying alongside a long red carpet, leading up to the bar where wine glasses are stacked to the ceiling. People are strolling in with brimming smiles, wearing beautiful suits and dresses, as others are eager to photograph them. The night has begun. But this isn't an ordinary black tie event. The Whisker Whirl, held at the Depot Hotel in Minneapolis, is a spectacle for all ladies, gentlemen, and canines that attend. Though it may seem like any cocktail party, dinner, or auction, it is far more than that. This social outing, where the dogs are beautiful and the people are well-groomed, is a celebration of animals. As president and CEO of the Animal Humane Society, Janelle Dixon told me.
So the Whisker Whirl is an event for people and their pups. So it's unique in that people come for a dinner and auction and they can bring their dogs. So pets are part of people's families, and people are always looking for places they can go and things they can do with their dogs and their cats. So we came up with this idea to do something that people could do with their dogs. So we have several hundred dogs that will be here tonight, along with 600 people.
It's hard to leave the house and say goodbye to the dogs. They're looking up at you as if to say, why can't I come? So it's nice they're invited too. And people are certainly happy about this.
Loving it. Great. First time here and having a great time. We wish we could bring our dogs to more events and dinners and happy hours, and so this is wonderful.
Janelle raises a good point. Animals are part of the family and should be treated as such. And if you're worrying about cleaning up, don't worry. She also has that covered.
People are pretty good about watching after. These guys are all house trained, so we don't really see a lot of accidents. And the dogs seem to all get along fairly well. You might be hearing a little barking here and there, but overall, people are well-mannered and behaved, and so are their pets.
As Janelle indicates, the sophistication even reaches the animals themselves.
Yeah, so not only do the people dress up, but many of us dress up our pets. So I just actually saw a couple of pugs come in, and one had a gown on and the other one had a tux. So it's all of us who get dressed up, and it's a lot of fun.
It's a fun event for everyone. In fact, I was getting a little carried away myself.
Do you mind?
No, please do. Yes, you may take
that
a photograph.
That is the cutest thing
I've ever seen. His name is Argo.
That is the cutest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, Argo,
he's the cutest.
But behind the fun, there is still an important message to convey.
And our overall goal is really to create understanding about the challenges that affect pets in our community and how the community can be a part of being a solution to that problem. So three things that people can do are spay-neuter, adopt from an animal welfare organization, and put an ID tag on their pets. And those are three things that can help animals immeasurably and help animals to ensure maybe they don't come to a shelter.
On the table by the ballroom entrance, a well-decorated table resides, covered in pamphlets. One of them reads, Emma is a beautiful 2-year-old hound boxer mix who came to us from a shelter in Tennessee. She is a gentle and friendly dog who was given a second chance of finding a home. Through our transport program, thousands of dogs, puppies, cats, kittens, and critters are helped each year. And by partnering with outside agencies, Animal Humane Society is not only giving animals another chance of finding a new home, but also preventing the possibility of these animals being euthanized at other shelters. These people aren't just here to flaunt their fancy clothes and eat hors d'oeuvres. They are proud supporters of the Animal Humane Society, helping animals like Emma find a home.
We come every year, just hunters from the Humane Society, and every dog I've ever had is from there, so always want to make sure to support them, and it's a fun event to get your dogs out.
Janelle's role as CEO and president span a wide range of responsibilities, assuring everyone is aware of the importance of looking after animals in need.
Every day is a celebration of the animals. So, you know, the work started because there are issues that they face, but really it's celebrating the bond between people and animals and the role of people that pets play in people's lives, and that's what it's all about.
As the Animal Humane Society's vision states, they are working to compassionately and responsibly create a more humane world for animals. In fact, one of their core values is all about treating animals humanely. They believe in the intrinsic value of animals. They believe a unique and reciprocal bond exists between animals and humans. And finally, they believe that animals are worthy of our time, money, and attention. And what better way to highlight this than the Whisker Whirl itself? This is Matt Curtis with Culture Q.
Minnesota has ample supply of unique radio programs, and it's not just because it's the home of Culture Q. Producer Mitch Skinner looks at a volunteer-based comedy show that launched this January to find out if it can hang with the big dogs.
Lights, cameras, Celine, No, let's just do radio.
In a way, it's easier than, say, writing for television, because if you want to have a 80-foot dragon, you don't need to get it built. You just have to say that it's there and say it in a compelling enough way to let people make that leap with you.
John Moe is the host and head writer of Wits from American Public Media, but we'll get to him later. First, I gotta tell you about this new show called Big Fun Radio Fun Time. It's live radio with actors and sound effects and the whole works. It's recorded at Bryant Lake Bowl in Minneapolis, and, well, I'll just let Tim Wick explain.
What we're trying to do is what I try to describe as an old-timey radio show with new-timey comedy.
Wick is the artistic director for Fearless Comedy Productions, the company behind Big Fun Radio Funtime.
So we're trying to take classic radio structures and write similar kinds of scripts in a comedy kind of format.
Wick is working on an homage to the War of the Worlds for the upcoming show. It's the 75th anniversary of the original broadcast.
The shape is rising out of the pit.
Except rather than the entire world freaking out over the fact that the aliens arrived, the entire world is not at all worried about the fact that the aliens have arrived. Because, in fact, they've been through this 75 times before, and they've always gotten through it okay. You know, I try to take standard styles and play with them. And so I'll take something that inspires me and do something that strikes me funny, and hopefully it strikes other people funny, too.
And there's a colorful cast of characters. Tim Wick even has a few of his own.
The Scottish dwarf that I do is, he's a Scottish dwarf, and I think he's from outer space. He's a space dwarf, but somehow he's Scottish.
But the writers are free to build their own worlds, and they can choose any genre they want. Sci-fi, noir, fantasy, anything. It just has to be 8 to 10 minutes long, and most importantly, it has to be funny. But if there's an elephant in the room, or an 80-foot dragon in the room, it's John Moe. Except Moe isn't really a dragon or a threat at all, because dragons are scary, and Wits really isn't a threat to Big Fun Radio Fun Time.
You know, I'm sure some people love Garrison's show that aren't particularly crazy about mine, and some people would love something new that, you know, that they're not getting anywhere else.
Garrison is Garrison Keillor from A Prairie Home Companion.
We came along when there was already a very well-established and very successful music comedy variety program on, you know, being distributed by our own company.
Again, A Prairie Home Companion.
But we just started doing it and people liked it, so why not?
I mean, there was a reason that back in the days of classic radio, they had live audiences and they would fill the theater and people loved watching it. And I think it still is more visual than people realize.
There's enough news shows. Why not more sketch comedy shows?
It's a little dull around this old space station, eh? Well, don't wish for too much excitement. You just might get what you wish for. Perhaps a sudden air leak, a radiation storm, or even an attack by alien space zombies.
Just between you and me, and the rest of the world, John Moe has helped Culture Key reporters with their vocal performances in the past. He had plenty of advice to offer then, and he has plenty of advice to offer now when it comes to radio and comedy, but that doesn't mean that radio is always working for him.
Well, sure. I mean, if you're not failing, then you're playing it safe, and that's worse than sucking. I've done stuff that sucks many times.
Moe says there's a lot of stuff he writes that has about a 75% chance of being a total disaster. But if they reach that golden zone, that other 25%, they could be brilliant. And he thinks that's a risk well worth taking.
Fortunately, most of the time, I hit that 25%. I did this sketch last spring as a sort of Mad Men takeoff. And that's one that I wrote personally. And
here come the madmen, drinking booze in their hands.
Off to another day writing advertisement sayings for me, Dan Drapel. I've got my face cigarettes and my grown-up brown drink.
It was just so freaking weird that I really thought it would be a disaster, and it ended up being one of the most popular sketches we've ever done. And so, I mean, that taught me that, like, there's a real hunger by the audience to take a risk and to go somewhere new and to you know, see something that is wobbly, but it's at least different.
Tim Wick and Big Fun Radio Funtime are trying something new, by revamping something old.
I really enjoy it. I've done voice acting for several years in a few comedy radio kind of things, and I really enjoyed doing it. And so that's really what made me want to start doing it, is because there weren't a lot of opportunities out there to do that sort of thing, and I wanted to create more of them.
And Wick agrees with Mo that audience members are willing to give something new a try. But clearly, neither of them has heard Culture Q's rendition of Sherlock Holmes before.
Very good. Very good indeed. If those things were only true now, I'd be wonderfully impressed. It would be absolutely remarkable.
For Culture Q, I'm Mitch Skinner.
That's all for this week. Tonight you heard from David DeMarc, Markita Fornoff, Ross Cable, Jared Greenenson, Matt Curtis, and Mitch Skinner. Producers for Culture Q are Mitch Skinner, Markita Fornoff, Amy Friedman, and Matt Curtis. Our culture coach is Sarah Manchek, and your host and managing editor is Noel Clark. You can find archives of our show on RadioK.org or listen live on the Radio K iPad and iPhone app, available at the iTunes Store. We'll see you next week. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.